Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is March 17th. We are in Yirmiyahu. We are in Perek Dalet, Chapter 4. We're up to Pasuk Tezvav, Verse 15. We are going to make an attempt to finish this chapter, although we have a lot to talk about, particularly about Pesach, even though the tone of what we're going to learn tonight is, as we've had in Yirmiyahu before, is not going to be pleasant. There's a lot in here that is a warning and is critical. But still, even though that seems to be in stark contrast to Pesach, there is going to be several references to Pesach as well, which are going to be uplifting and positive. So the pasuk tells us, Tezvav 15, Ki kol magid midon u'mashmiya aven meharef royim. Because Yirmiyahu here is warning the Jews about the impending punishment, because the sound is speaking from Dun. Dun was in the north of Eretz Yisrael, and from there we're hearing the sound of the enemy approaching. U'mashmiya aven mehar Ephraim, and we can hear sinning from the mountain of Ephraim. So Chazal tells us, the Medrash tells us, and Targum Yonason here emphasizes it, that the reference to Dun is a reference to the Avodah Zarah, to the idolatry that took place in Dun, which was one of the two Agolim, one of the two calves that was made by Yeravam ben Nevat when the kingdom was split back in the time of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. When that kingdom was split, so he put up two calves that were worshipped by the Jewish people. It was a terrible thing, and it went on for many, many years, and one of them was in Dun. So that's referenced here. And then the sin from the mountain of Ephraim refers to Pesel Micha, refers to the idol of Micha, which is a story told in Sefer Shoftim in Judges, which is a sad story, again, about idolatry that afflicted the Jewish people. And so those sins are brought up over here, which will then bring about this punishment. The Gemara tells us that you see how bad Avera is, because the Avera can affect the future, and the Avera can affect the past. How can the Avera affect the future? Well, here, the Avera of the calves, the calf that was worshipped in Dun, had occurred over 100 years prior to this, meaning it ended over 100 years prior to this story, because it was only when the 10 tribes were still there. But they were no longer there in the time of Yirmiyahu, and the calves are no longer being worshipped. So even though it had been over 100 years since this had happened, nevertheless it is brought up over here as a something which the Jews were going to have to pay a price for. How do you see that Avera affects the past? So that is a verse, it's a pasuk in Parashas Lech Lecha. Parashas Lech Lecha we find when Avraham Avinu was fighting with the four kings, after the four kings defeated the five kings and they took Lot captive, then Avraham Avinu fought them. He chased them and he fought them. And the pasuk tells us in Parashas Lech Lecha, it's Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Yudalid, chapter 14, verse 14. Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv. Avram heard that his brother, meaning his nephew, had been taken captive. Vayarek es chanichav yulidei veiso. So he armed his, those of his household. Shmona asar ushlosh meos, 318 men. Vayirdof ad Dun. And he chased them until Dun. Rashi tells us, why until Dun? Now, there was no place called Dun yet. This is mentioned, Torah is referring to the portion of Dun in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, there was no person named Dun yet. There certainly was no portion of Dun. But this is Al Shem Ha'as, and it's using the reference that we're familiar with later on in the Chumash. So Rashi tells us, why only until Dun? Why did he chase them until Dun? Rashi says, Sham Toshash Kocho, there his strength weakened Avraham Avinu, his strength weakened. Sherah Shasidin Banav Lahamid Sham Egel, because he saw that in the future his descendants would put up a calf of Avodah Zarah there in Dun. And therefore, that caused him to be weak when he got as far as Dun. So we have an example of the Avera affecting the past, that even though the Avera hadn't happened yet, but because there was going to be an Avera that would take place there, that affected Avraham Avinu. And that is repeated in the next pasuk. It says, Vayechalek alehem laila, and he split up against them at night. He and his men split up to chase them at night. Hu va'avadav, he and his servants, Vayakim, and he struck them. Vayudefem ad chova, he chased them until chova, Hashem yismol lidamasek, which is north of Damascus. What is chova? Chova means that which causes an obligation, that which causes a liability. That's what it means. So where is this place called Chova? That which causes a liability. It's a funny thing to name a place. Rashi says, Ein makom sheshmo Chova. There is no place that's name is Chova, liability. V'dun kore Chova. Dun is called Chova, liability. Ashem avodas kochavim, because of the idolatry, shasida lios sham, that would eventually be there. So Avraham Avinu was affected by the avera that his children would perpetrate there in the area that he was fighting with the four kings. So we find an example of an avera affecting the past. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. We're going to come back to Pasuk Tezvav, to verse 15 soon, because it's going to have to do with Pesach. But let's move on a little bit first. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. Hazkiru lagoyim, mention this to the nations. Hine hashmiu al Yerushalayim, behold, you will make this heard in Yerushalayim. Notzrim boyim emeretz hamerchak, those who will lay siege to the city are coming from a faraway land. Yirmiyahu is warning them. An army is coming that will lay siege to Yerushalayim, made up of many nations. Vayitznu al rei Yehuda kolam, they have put against the cities of Yehuda their voices. They are coming with bravado in order to attack and to lay siege to these cities. Kishomrei sadai, they will be like those who guard the fields. They will be spread out all around Yerushalayim like those who guard a field. Hayu aleha misaviv, they will be on it all around it. Ki osi marasa nu'um Hashem, because me, they have rejected, they've rebelled against, they've gone against me, says Hashem, that's why this is happening. Pasuk Yuches, verse 18, Darkeich umal olayich asu elalach, your ways and your behavior has brought this upon you. Zos ra'aseich kimar, this is your evil, because it is bitter. Kinaga adli beich, it has touched all the way till your heart. The evil has touched all the way till your heart. Says the Medrash, what is the heart of the Jewish people? What does it mean it's touched all the way till your heart? The Medrash cites the pasuk, it brings the verse from Shiras Devorah, from the Song of Devorah, where Devorah says, let me find it over here and I will hopefully give you the address, where Devorah says, you can find Shiras Devorah in the Haftorah of Parshas Bishalach. That's where it is in a Chumash. But Devorah says, it is in Shoftim, in Judges, in Perek Hay in chapter 5. And it is, find the right pasuk here. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Libi, my heart, L'chokikei Yisrael, is to the Torah sages of the Jewish people. Hamisnadvim ba'am, that give of themselves to the nation. Baruch Hu Hashem, bless Hashem. Devorah associates her heart with the Talmidei Chachamim, with the Torah sages. Says the Medrash, here in Yirmiyahu, when he says the evil has even touched your heart, it's even touched the Sanhedrin. Even the Torah scholars of the time, the evil is so pervasive, it's touched everybody. That's how far it has gone. Yirmiyahu is criticizing the Jewish people. Pasuk Yutes, verse 19. May I, ochila, kiros libi. May I, my insides, my inner self, ochila, I hope, I cry out, I'm worried. Kiros libi, the chambers of my heart. Homeli libi, my heart is, we need a strong word here, not anxious, not upset, but very troubled, very worried. Lo acharish, I will not be quiet. Ki kol shofar shamat nafshi, because the sound of the shofar my soul has heard. Shofar over here does not refer to the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. It refers to the shofar that was used by armies as they would blow a shofar or horns or various instruments to scare their enemy as they would come to attack. I've heard the sound of the shofar, says Yirmiyahu, in my nevuah, in my prophecy, I've heard this army coming. Truas milchama, the blast of the war. There's going to be a terrible war against Yerushalayim. Shever al shever nikra, a breaking after a breaking has been called. There'll be a one breaking, then another breaking. It's not going to be one blow. It's going to be blow after blow has been called upon you. This is a reference to the fact that there were at least two stages of galus of exile. We know that there was galus Yechonia, when the king Yechonia was taken into exile, which we'll learn about later in Yirmiyahu, and then at the very end, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, 11 years later, there was galus Tzidkiyahu, when King Tzidkiyahu was taken into galus as well. A blow after a blow, a breaking after a breaking has been called upon you. Kishudida kol ha'aretz, for the entire land has been taken captive. I think that's the way you translate it. Has been taken captive. Pisom shudidu ohalai. Suddenly, my tents have been made desolate, have been made empty. Rega yiriosai. Suddenly, in one moment, my curtains, which means my area that's covered by a curtain. What tents are being referred to over here? Again, we reference the Medrash. Says the Medrash that ohalai, my tents, refers to the bate midrashos. The study halls of the Jewish people would become desolate suddenly. It would go from being full of the sound of Torah to suddenly being empty of people and being desolate because of sin. We'll go one more verse before we talk a little bit. 21, Chaf Aleph, Ad Masai Erenes. Until when will I see Nes? Nes here does not mean miracle. The word Nes can also mean a banner, like a flag. Until when will I see that banner of war approaching? Eshma kol shofar, I'll hear the sound of the shofar. How long will it go on for? How long will I see this? Yirmiyahu is lamenting that he is foretelling and foreseeing this terrible war that is coming against the Jewish people, that they will lose and they will be in terrible straits and be taken into exile. We're not done yet what we want to read, but I want to pause here and go back a little bit and cover some points that we can cover now. We already mentioned back in Pasuk Tesvav in 15 that there was a reference to the Avera of the Egel of the calf in Dun, and that even affected Avraham Avinu. And I read to you from Parashas Lech Lecha two verses, one after the other, that talked about this limitation that Avraham had when he attacked the four kings because of the Avera, which would eventually take place in Dun. I want to read that to you again because I want to draw your attention to something that comes right between these two references. We read in Pasuk Yudal in verse 14 in Perek Yudal, chapter 14 of Bereishis in Parshas Lech Lecha. We read that he gathered his people to fight with the four kings, Vayirdof ad Dun, and he chased them until Dun, and that's when he got weak. Then it says, Vayechalek alehem laila, which we translated, he divided up against them at night. He chased them by dividing up his people, they divided up, they chased after them at night. Hu va'avadav, he and his servants, Vayakem, and he struck them. Vayirdefem ad chova, and he chased them until chova, till the place of liability, which is also till Dun. two references to this Avodah Zarah that took place. But Chazal tells us, and Rashi cites it in Parshas Lech Lecha, that the phrase Vayechalek Alehem Laila, he divided up against them at night, which literally means that the 318 men and Avraham, they split up as they chased the enemy, as the enemy scattered, that it can also be read as follows. Vayechalek Alehem Laila, the night was split up for them. What does that mean? That means, says Rashi here in Parshas Lech Lecha, according to the simple meaning, says Rashi, it refers to, as I said, that they split up to chase them at night. Umedresh agada, but we have a medresh. Shenechla kalayla, the night was split in half. Uvechetzio harisho nasa lo nes, and the first half of the night, a miracle happened for Avraham Avinu that he and his very few men were able to defeat this massive army of the four kings. He was grossly outnumbered and outgunned and weak, and he was able to defeat them anyway. So the first half of the night he had this miracle. V'chetzio hasheni, and the second half of the night, nishmar ubalo, was protected and saved for him, for Avraham, for his descendants, lechatzos laila shel Mitzrayim, for midnight of Mitzrayim, of the night of Pesach, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This war with the four kings takes place on the night of the 15th of Nisan, on Pesach night. And Avraham Avinu, so to speak, used the first half of that night to defeat the four kings, and the second half was preserved and put on hold for the future when his descendants were ready to leave Egypt, and Hashem would pass through Egypt on the night of Pesach and would strike the Bechoros, the firstborn, and that night the Jews would earn their freedom and they would leave the first thing in the morning. That war with the four kings is one of the stories that is referenced at the end of the Haggadah. You know, at the very end of the Haggadah, we have Nirtza. In Nirtza, you have various piyutim, various poems. Some of them are sung, some of them are just recited, people have different tunes. But the first two of those piyutim, of those poems, are Vayihi b'chatzi halayla and Va'amartem zevach Pesach. And in those piyutim, we reference all the various stories, miracles that took place on the night of Pesach. And one of the very first ones referenced, I think the very first one referenced, is this story of Avraham Avinu defeating the four kings that then happens on the night of Pesach. So, that means that when we have in Yirmiyahu the reference to Dan, which is a reference to the ego, to the sin of the calf that there was worshipped there, and the Medrash tells us that we find that a sin even affects the past, not just the future, and not just the present, but affects the past. And that is a reference to this war where Avraham Avinu fought until Dan, but then became weak because of the Aveira that would take place later. This story takes place on the night of Pesach. And Avraham Avinu defeats the four kings on the night of Pesach. That means that even though the Torah is telling us that there was a weakness in Avraham's fight with the four kings because of the Aveira that would eventually happen in that place, in Dan, because of worshipping the golden, not the golden calf, but worshipping the calf, one of the two calves. But still, a miracle took place for Avraham Avinu on that night. It was Pesach night. And the truth is, when we left Egypt, we did not leave Egypt as tzaddikim gemurim. We did not leave Egypt completely righteous. Even when we were crossing the sea, the Red Sea, we know that the Malachim said to Hashem, the angel said to Hashem, Halalu ovdei avodah zarah v'halalu ovdei avodah zarah. What's the difference between the Jews and the Egyptians? They both serve idols. Now, it doesn't mean that every Jew served idols, and it doesn't mean we served idols as badly as the Egyptians did, but the point is, we were not squeaky clean. We had things that weren't so perfect. But despite that, We were saved. Hashem miraculously took us out of Egypt, miraculously split the sea for us, and did those things for us. Avraham Avinu, even as he is experiencing weakness because of a sin that his children would eventually do, within that context, the miracle happens for the first half of the night for him. Which tells us that Hashem is not interested in punishing us, even if sometimes he has to do it unfortunately, but his real interest is to save us. His real interest is to give us closeness to him, which is what we really need to have. And the Pesach night is a night where we access that closeness that Hashem has with Avraham Avinu, despite the eventual sin that would take place. And the Jewish people themselves are able to access that closeness to Hashem, despite the fact they are not perfectly righteous when we leave Egypt. Yes?
Is it just with the Jewish people that the place of the Vera affects the people that are going there? Because, like, the person who started Sodom, you know, and he's there and all these horrible things have happened, but the generations don't seem weak.
Okay, so the question being asked is this concept that the Avera taking place in that area will affect Jews, both beforehand and afterwards, is that strictly a Jewish thing? Or is it all over the place, that wherever the Averos are done? So, I don't know the answer, but I will say that there's no question that whatever we do is certainly more impactful than anybody else. That's true for mitzvos, and it's also true, unfortunately, for Averos. We pack more of a punch. Our actions are simply more impactful, more powerful.
Right, but at Har Sinai, we did something really great, and Hashem was there, and we did something really awful, like...
So Har Sinai, you have both. Where you have the accepting of the Torah and the building of the Mishkan, and you also have the Ayigal Azav. You have both things happening over there. So I don't know how that would work. We also, you know, Har Sinai is also an obscure place. This is not an obscure place. So I'm not sure how that works either. But it's a good point. It's a good point. Now, back in Yirmiyahu, where we're learning right now, in Pasuk Yutes, verse 19, we have Yirmiyahu lamenting and crying out. He says, my insides, I cry out from the chambers of my heart. And then he says, a breaking up top of another breaking. It's terrible what's going to be happening over here. But he says, I cry out from the chambers of my heart. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that we know that Chizkiyahu HaMelech, King Chizkiyahu, became very sick. He had done something wrong. He was a great tzaddik, Chizkiyahu, but he had done something wrong. And he became very sick, sick enough to die. The Navi Yeshaya comes to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and he says, you're going to die because of your Avera. Chizkiyahu asks Yeshaya what the Avera is. They discuss it. And Chizkiyahu does teshuva. And it says that he turned, and that he davened, and it says that he davened, he turned El Hakir. He turned to the Kir and davened. Now that is generally understood to mean he turned to the wall. A kir is a word for a wall. There are different words for a wall. Kosel, choma, but kir can also mean wall. It really means the face of the wall. It doesn't mean the whole thickness of the wall. It means just the face of the wall. But he turned towards the kir. The Gemara wants to know, what does that mean, he turned to the kir? So, the simple meaning is he turned towards the wall. But the Gemara gives an alternative meaning. And the Gemara says that it refers to the chambers of his heart. As it says in Yirmiyahu, may I ochila kiros libi, homel libi lo acharish. Citing our pasuk, our verse here, in Pasuk Yates, verse 19, that Yirmiyahu cries out from the chambers of his heart. And that Chizkiyahu davened from the chambers of his heart. And the Yerushalmi elaborates that Chizkiyahu did a cheshbon hanefesh, that he went through his actions. And he said to Hashem, I have gone through my actions, I have done teshuva for that which I have done wrong, and everything else is I have kept the Torah in all other ways. In every way, from the chambers of my heart, my entire being has kept the Torah. That which I didn't do properly, I did teshuva for, and therefore I beg of you to save my life. Chizkiyahu was miraculously healed on that night. And in fact, on that night, there were other great miracles that took place, including the destruction of Sanherib's army that had surrounded Chizkiyahu and was ready to destroy Yerushalayim. That army was destroyed. And there were many other miracles that took place on that night, including the healing of Chizkiyahu. That night, of course, was the night of Pesach. It is another one of the incidents that is mentioned in those piyutim, in those poems, in the beginning of Nirtza. We do not mention the sickness of Chizkiyahu, we mention the destruction of Sanherib's army, but the two things happen simultaneously. And here, in this pasuk, where Yirmiyahu is crying out from the chambers of his heart in pain because of the terrible destruction that's going to befall the Jewish people, but the Gemara references this and ties this pasuk together with the prayer of Chizkiyahu on the night of Pesach for his own sins, that he should be saved for himself to do teshuva. And it seems inescapable that Yirmiyahu is using this phrase, because Chizkiyahu came before Yirmiyahu by over 100 years. It seems that Yirmiyahu is invoking that which Chizkiyahu did. And he's saying, I cry out in pain, Mikiros Libi, from the chambers of my heart. What he's really saying is, my fellow Jews, cry out from the chambers of your heart. Don't forget what Chizkiyahu did all the time ago, that famous night of Pesach, when things looked so bad, when the Jews were surrounded by a horrible army, when Chizkiyahu the king, the righteous king, was sick to die, when there was no food to eat, when things looked so bleak, and that night incredible miracles happened. Why? Because Chizkiyahu cried out from the chambers of his heart. He did teshuva. He made sure to investigate and look through every part of himself from inside and out to make sure that he was following Hashem perfectly. And whatever he wasn't doing perfectly, he did teshuva. And that triggered the great miracle of that night. And Yirmiyahu here is saying, all is not lost. I foresee this terrible army that's coming against the Jewish people. I foresee this terrible calamity. But it doesn't mean it has to happen. Hashem listens when we do teshuva. Hashem listens when we daven. And it is the time to call out. And just as there was that incredible salvation on the night of Pesach with Chizkiyahu, that can happen again over here as Yirmiyahu is crying out to the Jewish people. Moving ahead in Yirmiyahu, Perek Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. Ki avil ami, Osi lo yadou, for my nation has sinned, they don't know me, says Hashem. Bonim sichalim hema, they are foolish children. Vulo nevonim hema, they are not wise. They are not, they don't have bina, for wisdom. Chachamim hema lehara, they are wise, they are smart, to do evil. Ulehitiv lo yadou, but they don't know how to do good. They're using their intellect, their considerable intellect, but they're using it for evil. Here we have a very important mussar, a very important criticism that we all should take to heart, that Hashem has blessed each and every one of us with considerable talents. Hashem has given us all kinds of blessings. And as we all know intellectually, but we don't always follow it, we know that the purpose of the blessings, whether they are material blessings, whether they are talents, whether they are intellect, whatever it is Hashem has given us, we know that the purpose of it is to serve Hashem properly. That's why He's given it to us. And unfortunately, sometimes we misuse what he has given us. And that is what Yirmiyahu is saying over here, in the name of Hashem. They are using their intellect to do evil, but to do good, they don't know how. They suddenly forgot. They suddenly don't know how to do good. They can't figure it out. But to do evil, they're able to figure it all out. They're able to do all kinds of evil with their intellect. That is not a good thing. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23. Ra'isi es haaretz. I've seen the land, says Yirmiyahu. Vine sohu vavohu. How about that phrase? And it is completely desolate. That's a phrase borrowed from Bereishis. Before creation, the world was tohu vavohu. It was completely empty. Says Yirmiyahu, I see the land, meaning the land of Israel. And it is tohu vavohu. That's what's going to happen. Meaning, it doesn't mean, of course, that it's going to be literally tohu vavohu, but it means that it's going to be such destruction, it's going to appear like there's nothing there. Ve'ala shamayim, I look up to the heavens, ve'ein oram, and there's no light coming from the heavens. That's what I see. I see only darkness. Ro'isi ha'harim, I see the mountains, v'inei ro'ashim, and behold, they are flattened. V'chol ha'givaos hiskal kalu, and all the smaller mountains have been ruined. I see that the mountains, the beautiful mountains, have been ruined. Ra'isi v'inei ein ha'adam, I see and behold, there's no man, there's nobody left in Israel. V'chol of ha'shamayim nadadu, and there's not even any birds. The birds of the sky, they've gone away, they've left. That's what I see in the future of Israel. Ra'isi, I've seen v'inei ha'karmel Hamidbar, the Carmel, which is the most fertile part of Israel. I see it becoming like a midbar, like a wilderness, like a desert. V'chol ha'rav nitetsu mipnei Hashem, and all of its cities have been destroyed because of Hashem, mipnei charon apo, because of his anger. I see the land becoming desolate. Kicho amar Hashem, because so says Hashem, shmama siya kol ha'aretz. The whole land will be desolate, v'chalalo e'eseh, but I will not destroy it completely. The land will be desolate, but I will not destroy completely. What does that mean? The land will be desolate, v'chalalo e'eseh, but I will not destroy completely. This means that Hashem guarantees, I will not destroy the Jewish people completely. There will always be a remnant. There will always be a she'eris ha'pleita. There will always be those who survive. I will never destroy them completely. I may have to destroy the land. I may have to put the Jews through a terrible time. But there will never be complete destruction. The Jewish people are still the only way that the world will ever come to recognize Hashem. And therefore the Jews and Hashem are forever intertwined and connected. And therefore the Jews will always survive. But we don't want survival like that, because it means there's destruction with survivors. That's not a great thing. Pasuk Chaf Ches, verse 28. We're going to come back, by the way, to all those references to the heavens and the mountains and the people and the birds, and that we're going to come all back to that presently. We're going to read it a little further, and then we'll come back to that. 28, Chaf Ches. Al zos te'eval ha'aretz. On this, the land should be in mourning. V'kadru ha'shamayim mima'al, and the heavens above should become cloudy. Al ki dibarti zamosi, because what I have said, I've said what I am thinking, says Hashem. I'm going to do what I've planned to do. V'lo nichamti, and I have not changed my mind. V'lo ashuv mimena, and I will not go back on my word. I've said what I'm going to do. And if things stand the way they are, and tshuva is not done, Hashem says, I am going to bring the destruction. Mikol parash v'rome keshes, from the sound of the cavalry and from those who shoot the arrow. And this is what Yirmiyahu was saying, from the sound of the army. Borachas kol ha'ir, because of this, the entire city will run away. Cities, entire cities will become empty because people are going to run for the hills. Bo'u be'alvim, they will come into the thickest part of the woods to escape the enemy. The thickest part of the woods where they can hide. Uva kefim alu, and they'll go up on the stones, the big stone areas where there can be caves where they can find to hide. Kol ha'ir azuva, the entire city is empty. Ve'en yoshev bahen ish, and there's no man living there. Ve'at shadud, and you are taken captive. Matasi, what can you do? What do you think you'll be able to do to protect yourself? Perhaps you think that you can make yourself someone or a people that your captors will want to treat nicely. Maybe you'll make yourself into people that your captors will find you endearing and they'll want to be nice to you. Kisilbashi shani, you'll wear beautiful clothing. Kisadi adizahav, you'll put on beautiful gold jewelry. Kisikri vapuchenayich, you'll put makeup over your eyes to make yourself beautiful. Lashav tisyapi, you will make yourselves beautiful for no reason, for nothing. Maasuvach ogevim, those who would molest you, they have despised you. Instead, they're going to seek your soul. Even those who would normally, even though this is not a nice thing, but even those who would normally molest you, they're not even going to bother with that. Instead, they're going to seek your soul. They're going to seek to kill. Kikol kicholla shamati, because the sound like a woman who is in her birth pangs, I have heard. Sara kemav kira, crying out like a woman who is giving birth. Kol bastzion tisya peach tifares kapeha. The sound of bastzion will cry out, will spread her hands like in pain. Oina li, woe to me, ki oifa nafshi lahargim, my soul has been worn out for those who would kill. And that is the way we end Perek Daled, chapter 4, not on a very positive note, although I will mention that the reference to the crying out like a woman giving birth, even though clearly the main intent is that it's a serious cry of pain, but we all know any time the Navi invokes a woman giving birth, that means that we're not dealing with an end. We're dealing with a beginning. And even though this is a terrible way for a beginning to happen, but the punishment is only to bring about the birth, is only to bring about the improvement that things should get better. It is not just to hurt. It is not just to bring pain and suffering. It is specifically to bring about a birth, to bring about that the Jews should improve. I'd like to go back to that series of psukim, those verses that dealt with the various parts of the world that Yirmiyahu is seeing that they'll become desolate. He says, I'll see the land become tohu vavohu, the light from the heavens will end, will become dark. And then he says, Pasuk Chavdal, verse 24. Ra'isi haharim v'inei ro'ashim, that I've seen the mountains and they've become flattened. V'chol ha'gva'os hiskal kalu, and the mountains, the smaller mountains would be messed up. They'll be ruined. Ra'isi v'inei ein ha'adam, I've seen and there's no man. V'chol ha'of ha'shamayim nadadu, and all this, the birds of the heavens have flown away. Ra'isi v'inei ha'karmel ha'midbar, I've seen, and the Carmel, the fertile area of Eretz Yisrael, has become like a wilderness. We know that as long as we were not in Eretz Yisrael became uninhabitable, it became a wilderness, and became, the Medrash tells us there weren't even any animals there. It was just completely desolate when we were not in Israel. The Medrash says, what does it mean, I've seen the mountains and the smaller mountains, and they've gotten ruined? So the Medrash says, and this is not only here, whenever you see the phrase harim u'gva'os, harim are mountains, gva'os are also mountains, gva'os are just smaller mountains. Harim are the bigger mountains, and gva'os are the smaller mountains. Whenever you see that type of phrase, the first thing you should think of, because it frequently, maybe always, means this, is the harim are the avos, are the patriarchs, and the gva'os are the imahos, are the matriarchs. That it is a reference to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Vilea. That's what they refer to. And what Yirmiyahu is saying over here is, I've seen the mountains, that would be the avos, the patriarchs, but they are no longer able to help us. And I've seen the gva'os, I've seen the matriarchs, Sarif Garachan Leia, and they're also unable to help us. There is something that we rely on called the Zuchus Avos. Zuchus Avos means the merit of our ancestors, of our Avos and Imahos, of our patriarchs and matriarchs. We rely on that. There is a concept of Tama Zuchus Avos. Tama Zuchus Avos means that the merit of our ancestors has been used up, has ended. We can no longer access their incredible merit because it's gone. It's already been used up. There is such a concept. It's not a forever thing. It is finite. It can be used up. And that's what Yirmiyahu was saying over here. I foresee that what's protecting us, which is the merit of our patriarchs and matriarchs, that's going to end. The thing is that it shouldn't really be possible for the Zuchus Avos and Imahus to end, because Hashem says that I preserve the merit of the ancestors for 2,000 generations. That's not 2,000 years, that's 2,000 generations. 2,000 generations is many thousands of years. So yes, it may be possible eventually to run out of Zuchus Avos, of the merit of our ancestors, but it shouldn't happen before Mashiach comes. There's plenty of time before we're going to get to 2,000 generations. So what does it mean that it could get used up? And what it means is as follows. It doesn't mean, it's not like you have a bank account and we keep drawing out of that bank account and now there's nothing left. There used to be billions and billions and billions of dollars in the account. And over the generations, we Jews have sinned, so we keep drawing out and drawing out and drawing out, and we're not replenishing it. And by the time we get to this generation, we've used it up, there's nothing left, says Yirmiyahu. That's not what it means. That what was deposited in the account far exceeds anything that can be used up over the generations. It's always there. It's not infinite, but it exceeds anything that would happen throughout the generations. What it means is that our access to that which our ancestors deposited in those accounts is contingent on us identifying and being identified as their descendants. We need to look like and resemble them in order to access what they deposited. We don't have to be perfect. The whole reason why we have to access what they deposited is because we're not perfect, unfortunately. But we have to still resemble them. Our hearts still have to be in a place where we want to be like them, where we want to be connected to Hashem as they were. Chayev Adam Lomar, a person is required to say, says the Gemara, Ad Masai Agi Umasai Lamasai Avosai, when will my actions reach the level of my ancestors? When will I be like Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? When will I be like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah? Will we ever get there? Of course not. They were giants. They were giant giants. They were the giants of all giants. There's no way we can reach their levels. Their levels were beyond description. But a person is required to say, when will I be like them? Meaning, we have to be aching to be like them. We want to be like them. Unfortunately, I can't. I'm not that great. But I want to be like them. My heart is to be like them with their connection to Hashem. As long as we are attempting to climb that mountain, then we have access to that mountain. Then we can draw out of that account. But if, God forbid, a Jew or the Jews as a whole turn their backs, chas v'shalom, on the legacy of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, then it's Tama Zuchus Avos Chas V'Shalom, then we lose, it ends the merit of the ancestors. It doesn't mean that it's used up, but the account is frozen. It gets cut off from us. We can't access the account. We lose the password to get into the account. And that is a scary thought. And that's what Yirmiyahu is saying over here. I foresee this terrible state where we will no longer have access to the account of our avos and imahos. So that's the avos and imahos. And as I mentioned, harim ugvos, the big mountains, the smaller mountains, regularly refers to the patriarchs and matriarchs. But as we move on, pasuk kaf hey, verse 25, ra'isi, I saw, v'ine ein ha'adam, and there's no man. It doesn't say there's no man. It says there's no the man. Who is the man? What does it mean, ein ha'adam, the man? So, the Medrash tells us, this is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. As the pasuk tells us, V'ha'ish Moshe Anav Me'od, Moshe, the man Moshe, was most humble, Mikol Ha'adam, from all of the men on the face of the earth. Moshe Rabbeinu is called Ha'adam. And I see that there is no Adam, there is no man, meaning there's no Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, we are not descendants of Moshe Rabbeinu. Some people are, but most people are not descendants of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not like the patriarchs and matriarchs. So what does that mean? That I've seen that there's no Adam, there's no man. There's no Moshe Rabbeinu. So what this means is a similar idea. The legacy, the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu, I see, says Yirmiyahu, that it's lost to the Jewish people. What is the legacy of Moshe Rabbeinu? Well, of course, the legacy is the Torah itself. And Yirmiyahu says, even if we can't get to the legacy, the zchus, the merit of the avos and imos, but we can at least reach the zchus, the merit of the Torah itself, but unfortunately I foresee that that's also going to be closed off from us. But now we have a very, very strange reference. Pasuk Chavav, verse 26. Ra'isi, I saw, v'inei ha-karmel ha-midbar. And the Carmel, the most fertile area, is like the midbar, is like the wilderness. Says the Medrash, what does Carmel refer to? And really, many of you could probably guess this. If you see the word Carmel, who do you think of first? Okay, Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel. You think of Eliyahu and Avi, perfect. You think of Eliyahu. So he says, I see, and the Carmel, which refers to Eliyahu and Avi, Hamidbar, is like the wilderness. Now, what does that mean? I can understand we are not unable to access the merit of our avos and imos. We're unable to access the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu of the Torah. But what does it mean we can't access the merit of Eliyahu HaNavi? Look, Eliyahu HaNavi was one of the greatest prophets to ever live, but we don't find that he created some sort of a merit that we all are able to access, like Torah, like our avos, like our imos. What does it mean that I see that Eliyahu HaNavi, the Carmel, is like the wilderness? We've lost our access to him. But the truth is that Eliyahu HaNavi is our ticket to Mashiach. Eliyahu HaNavi comes before Mashiach to herald the Mashiach. We know this. The pasuk tells us that Eliyahu HaNavi comes and he comes prior to the great day of Hashem, which one understanding in the Gemara is that that means the day before Mashiach comes. We know that Eliyahu HaNavi heralds the Mashiach. And what Yirmiyahu was saying is that I see the Carmel, that's Eliyahu HaNavi, is like the Midbar, like the wilderness. I see that we've lost our access to Eliyahu HaNavi, that he's not going to come so quickly before this destruction. This destruction that's going to take place will not be preempted by Eliyahu HaNavi, who would come and herald Mashiach, which would then prevent the destruction. I see that it's not going to happen, says Yirmiyahu, at least not the way things stand now, not unless people do teshuva. We know that on the night of Pesach, we open the door. We say we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi. That's what we say. We pour the kos shel Eliyahu, we pour the cup of Elijah, and we open the door. But we don't really open the door to let in Eliyahu HaNavi. If that were the case, then Eliyahu HaNavi would come in physical form. Eliyahu HaNavi is a real person. This is something mysterious about Eliyahu HaNavi. He's a real person. He was born, he grew up, he lived, just like a regular person. The thing is, Eliyahu HaNavi didn't die. Instead, he went up in a chariot to the heavens. Eliyahu HaNavi, therefore, is not dead. He's alive. But he's not in a physical form like you and I are. He is in some sort of a non-physical form, but not dead. We know that Eliyahu HaNavi sometimes is instructed to come back to this world in a physical form. There are times he comes in a physical form. Most of the time when that happens, we don't know about it. There were great people in the past who did know, but we are not on that level. But we know that that can happen, that Eliyahu HaNavi can return in a physical form. On the night of Pesach, he is not coming to all of our homes in a physical form. If that were true, we would have a physical person walk in the door. That's what would happen. But that doesn't happen. At least not in my house. Maybe it happens in your houses, but not in my house. So, Eliyahu HaNavi is coming. We know that. We know that he comes to every Seder on the night of Pesach. But he comes in his non-physical form. The non-physical form of Eliyahu HaNavi does not require the door to be opened. He doesn't walk in. He's there, but in a non-physical way, which means there's no going through a doorway. Then why do we open the door? What's the purpose of opening the door? So the Mefarshim say, the Mishnah Berurah brings this, that the reason for opening the door is because we know the night of Pesach is a Leil Shimurim, it's a night of protection. In other words, it's a night that has the same level of protection as daytime. The night of Pesach is not perfectly safe. It's not like nothing bad could ever happen on the night of Pesach, but it's not a nighttime. Even though you open the door and it looks dark outside, it is considered to be, from the Torah's perspective, a day. It's a 24-hour day. There's no night, even though it looks dark. And therefore, we should treat that night as if it's a daytime. We open the door to show that we trust in Hashem's word that it's not nighttime, it's daytime. And just like during the day, we're not afraid to open our door. We'll open the door during the day. We'll leave it open sometimes. We'll leave it unlocked sometimes. We're not so careful to close a door and bolt it and everything like that during the day as we are at night. So we show that the night of Pesach is really a daytime. And we open the door. And in that merit, that we're willing to trust in Hashem, Eliyahu HaNavi will come and herald the Mashiach. That's what happens on the night of Pesach. We open the door to show our complete devotion and trust in Hashem so that He will send Eliyahu HaNavi to herald the Mashiach. Eliyahu HaNavi, before he went up to Shamayim, what happened? He was living in Eretz Yisrael. And then Hashem sent him on a journey, a long journey. And the journey was to Har Sinai. That's where he was sent. And it was there where Hashem appeared to him. And then he was told to go back and to give over the mantle of being the chief Navi to his student Elisha, and then he went up in the chariot to heaven. When he went to the mountain, to Har Sinai, he went to the Midbar. He went to the wilderness. Here, Yirmiyahu says, I see the Carmel, I see the fertile area, which is a reference to Eliyahu, Hamidbar, the wilderness. I see him going to the wilderness. It's not good when the fertile area becomes a wilderness, becomes a desert. That's not good. But within that analogy, within that imagery, I should say, is also the imagery of Eliyahu HaNavi going away from the settled area into the wilderness in order for Hashem to speak to him and appear to him, and then he moves on and gives over the mantle to Elisha, and then he goes up into on the chariot to heaven, where he then returns on the night of Pesach, and we behave in a way that can herald the Mashiach. The night of Pesach, when we do this, we're in Galus. We are in exile. We are like the Midbar. We are like the wilderness. We're not like the Karmel. We're not like the fertile area. We're not in a state of Geula, of redemption. We're in a state of Galus. But even within that state of Galus, that state of exile, of Midbar, of wilderness, of desert, even there, and maybe precisely there, Hashem still instructs Eliyahu HaNavi to come to our Sedarim. And he tells them, I want you to go, and I want you to see how the Jews behave. Look at how they trust in me. And they open the door, and they say, we trust in Hashem. And that is going to ultimately trigger my instructing you, Eliyahu, to announce the coming of Mashiach. When we open the door at our Seder, we have the minhag, it's a custom that my wife's grandfather, Alav HaShalom, used to do, which is they would open the door and he would say, Baruch Haba. He would say, Baruch Haba for Eliyahu HaNavi, even though Eliyahu HaNavi is not walking through the door. But he would say, Baruch Haba. I always think of that, and I used to say, why do we say Baruch Haba? It's not actually walking in, but I've thought about that, and I've thought to myself that the real meaning of that is that we're saying that in this merit, we will be able to say Baruch Haba to Eliyahu HaNavi in person, and eventually Baruch Haba to the Melech HaMashiach himself, who will come because of the merit of our trust in Hashem. Yes?
So you said that Eliyahu was a person, but when he went up in the chariot, maybe he became something between an angel and a person. And like when somebody's deceased, we open a window so that their neshama can go out.
Right? Yeah, it's
so
not...
Is it opening a door so his neshama can come in?
The Gemara tells us that Eliyahu is still alive. He's not like a dead person. It's a different thing. There are these ideas, but Eliyahu is not dead. He's alive. He's alive in some form that we're not familiar with, but he's alive.
So it doesn't have to be a human form.
Right. Right. But he is alive. Yeah. Everybody should have a Chag Kosher v'Sameach. Should have a wonderful Yom Tov of Pesach. We will begin again, Mirtza Hashem, not on the first Wednesday after Pesach. Pesach ends on a Sunday night. We will not begin on that Wednesday. That Wednesday, Mirtz Hashem, I have a niece getting married in Baltimore. So we'll not be getting together then. We will begin the second Wednesday after Pesach. I don't know the date exactly, but it will go out on the Shabbos flyer. It will go out on the email. It will be the second Wednesday after Pesach. Have a Chag Kosher v'Sameach.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.